Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
Impress your friends. Amaze your coworkers. Make your family proud. Here's what you need to know. I'm going to tell you
what you need to know. All right, we'll start you off with some NFL rules talk. Why wouldn't we, right? Everybody likes to debate the rules, the figuring out what rules are going to change in the NFL. We'll start with the booth umpire and technology advisor. These were proposed. They were not endorsed by the competition committee, meaning they are unlikely to be approved as permanent rule changes. So, sky ref or whatever that they're referring to, not recommended. Instead, though, they have recommended a preseason experiment. So it doesn't look like it's going to happen in the regular season, but they're going to experiment with it in the preseason. If it goes well, supposedly, I suppose it could then be implemented for next season. Stay tuned on that one. And there is momentum growing for one rule change, and that is an alternative onside kick, right? The Eagles were the ones that put this forward. This is the instead of kicking off after a score late in the fourth quarter, a team would have the option for one offensive play from its 25-yard line. It would need to gain 15 yards to keep possession. So basically it's fourth and 15 from the 25. You come up short, the other team takes over. You get it. You continue on your drive. The Broncos had offered this as a proposal last year. It was rejected, but they did try it in the Pro Bowl. The numbers on it since the start of the 18 season, where they had new kickoff rules, limiting how many guys you could put on a side and how much of a run-up you got, all those things. The recovery of onside kicks has been just over 10%. It was 19.5%, so pretty much a 50% drop from 20 to 10% at recovering the onside kicks. And so they're trying to put some more excitement and give teams a better chance of staying alive, keep the games going late.
Love the new
rule. I'm all for it.
Yeah, especially with the team we've got, man. 10% chance for onside. I give Patrick Mahomes well over a 10% chance of completing 4th and 15.
What would you give him on 4th and 15? I'll go 35.
Yeah, I think it's higher than it would have been. I would have taken this as a replacement for the onside kick that got 20% recovered. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Andy Reid and him and that group, hell yeah. Yeah.
And knowing that they've got to get the 15, they'll spread the whole field. It's all there. You're chasing. Hell, he might go long and say, let's get it all right here. You're obviously down and chasing it. I think the thing that I'd be intrigued by is, and I think it sounds like they're only going to allow it in the fourth quarter. Does the onside kick still exist for earlier on, if you want to strategize that way?
Yeah, like the Saints in
the Super
Bowl.
Try to catch somebody sleeping?
Right.
Yeah, or can you just go, okay, we're going to start the half. Instead of kicking off, we're going to go fourth and 15 at our own 25. There's no surprise, but there's at least a chance to, we think we have the magic play, and so we're going to play it right now.
Although, if you're sitting there, you're thinking you're going to receive the second half kickoff, you come out of the locker room, and all of a sudden your defense has to jump on the field at fourth and 15 at 25-yard line. That's a little bit of a disruption.
Real quick note, Seren. Patrick Mahomes tweeted out about 3 hours ago, 4th and 15, laughing emoji with just the single tier, not double tier, laughing emoji.
Yeah, just one tier? Yeah, they'll handle it. It's great news for the Chiefs.
He's something else, man.
They're also talking about discussing making permanent the expansion of automatic replay reviews to include scoring plays. Now, let me finish. Scoring plays and turnovers negated by a foul and any extra point attempt. Hmm. So right now, it's got to be a successful scoring play to be reviewed. If a penalty calls it back, it can't be reviewed. But if a penalty does call, because it's not a score. But that would change. A score that's called back would be an automatic review. So you get a PI in the end zone that calls back a touchdown. That would be reviewed as to whether or not it should or shouldn't be. All those different things. So I think that's interesting. Yeah. Competition committee's got two minor rule changes that they have endorsed. Andy Reid's on that committee, by the way. Expanding defenseless player protection to a returner who catches the ball. So, in other words, you can't be like, okay, he caught it, now lay him out. You got to basically give him a chance to get his head down and get a look at what's coming for him. That one seems – that sounds great.
Yeah.
But
Such
a judgment call.
Any judgment call
such
to me.
Such a judgment call.
It seems to have been by and large, beyond the grasp of NFL officials.
Yeah. And then closing a loophole, that's the Bill Belichick rule where you burn the clock, take the penalty, clock keeps starting up. Titans did it right back to him in the AFC divisional round. They are planning on stopping that so the clock won't be able to be run down. You won't be able to drain almost 3 minutes the way both the Patriots and the Titans did. Titans in that playoff game. Those are the things that they are looking at changing in the NFL. All right, some news from Jeff Passan. You hear him right here in the program, Major League Baseball Insider. On SportsCenter, Passan said there's one thing that's keeping the two sides apart.
The money is what's holding everything up right now. And Major League Baseball is saying we are going to be in dire financial straits if we have to pay you your full prorated salaries. And the players are saying in a March agreement that we had with you, it says we will get our full prorated salary. So it's coming down to cash at this point. And the question is, are they going to be able to figure it out?
I come back to what we talked about. Mike Matheny's right. The money's been taken out of the game. It's eventually going to trickle down to the players. And I think it's important for the players to try to find a solution. And maybe that solution is they get paid exactly the way they're planning on getting paid now, but they give back some money next year.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or maybe it's they give some this year and there's less of a drag next year. But somewhere along the line, they're going to feel it. What I hope is this leads to a discussion of revenue sharing. Full-on salary cap and salary floor. And I think what the players need to understand is the owners are not sitting there just throwing money around all over the place, right, like they used to. They seem to have been able to suddenly help themselves. They've got better bean counters, and they don't keep driving the salaries up and up and up, and players' total compensation has gone down 2 years in a row. I would be worried that they're going to get better and better and better, and if you piss them off now, will they really take it out on you? And no free agent will get anything next year. I think that's one of the things you got to be worried about. Oh, well, they can sue for collusion.
Yeah,
yes, that's a pain in the ass, too. And it's not the same as getting a big lucrative contract. If you have a salary floor, they got to pay somebody, and that money should trickle down accordingly based upon a player's abilities. As it is right now, middle class is leaving the game of baseball. It's a handful of stars and then everybody else on first six-year deals or one-year deals once they become veterans.
You could maybe win a court case on collusion, but it would be a Pyrrhic victory. You're losing money in the long run, so no one's going to really go that route.
Jeff Passan asked how much time MLB has to get a deal done to get the season going in that first week of July.
Well, we're talking about a proposed June 10th or so start to spring training. And the way that it would get phased in is pitchers would come first and then players. And so it would be a gradual thing to build up. And you'd have about 3 weeks of spring training until you have games at the beginning of July. So if we just count backward, in people's minds, a deal needs to be struck at latest by the end of May. If there's not something on the table signed by June 1st, we're not going to have baseball as early as they were hoping. And that is a very loud ticking clock right now.
Yeah, and that's why they got to get it done. They need to play as much baseball as they possibly can. That means getting things done and getting out on the field. But you can hear the conversation from Jeff Passan is all about the fight that's going on in Major League Baseball. Adrian Wojnarowski, the NBA insider at ESPN, talking with Scott Van Pelt, said the NBA's negotiations are much friendlier than what we're seeing in baseball.
I don't think you can get as contentious as baseball is. I think there's a better working relationship, especially among Adam Silver and the star players in the league. And you know this, Scott, the star players can drive so much of the conversation and help shape the thinking of their peers around the league. And Adam Silver's relationships with those guys is strong, more so than even some of the individual owners. And that's a big difference between baseball and the NBA. And the financial structure is already set. They're not arguing right now over what the players are going to be played. The players know they're going to lose money based on how many games are canceled. The big fight in the NBA, Scott, is coming with next season.
I think that's interesting. The big fight is coming with next season. We will see how this all plays out. But NBA owners and players have always played much nicer together. We will take a break. We come back. Data scientist Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus is next in the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
Even in those old-time photos of people gathered around the radio, they're always looking at the radio like, I can't wait till they invent the TV.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. He does the research, analyzes the data, and checks the variables. He even submits his findings for peer review. He's the only man with a lab coat made entirely from NFL bed sheets. He's data scientist Eric Eager of Pro Football Focus. Only on the program.
But first, a good sense into the hour answer. On this date in 1948, Joe DiMaggio hit for the cycle. Three Hall of Famers have hit for the cycle against the Royals. I asked for any one of them. Rod Carew.
Dave Winfield?
Dave Winfield was the last one to do it in 1991, very end of his career. Rod Carew in 1970, Carlton Fisk in 1984.
Wow, very good. Winfield, Fisk, and Carew.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good crew. Well, I mean, say that they were Hall of Famers.
Yeah,
so
it kind of goes without saying, but.
Yeah, it kind of speaks to it. GoodSenseSubs.com, put your order in right now. Pick the time, pick it up on your way home. They got you covered. Don't forget about those GoodSense to-go meals. An absolutely fantastic option, particularly if you're buying food for anyone who is at home. Maybe they're older or have an immune system that they are worried about getting out. Grab some GoodSense to-go meals. They're grab-and-go meals that are perfect. You just put them in, warm them up, and they are ready to go. Everything you need, sides are in there as well. Things like grilled Alaskan salmon, classic pot roast, lasagna, naked chicken and veggies, meatloaf, and, of course, their wonderful pastas as well. It's GoodSense to-go. Go to GoodSenseSubs.com. Of course, you can get their wonderful sandwiches with the bread baked fresh twice each day, the meats, cheeses, sliced fresh, right when you order them. That is GoodSense, founded right here in Kansas City, in Lenexa, Kansas, 30 years ago, locally owned and operated. It's your neighborhood GoodSense. Let's talk to Eric Eager, Pro Football Focus, data scientist, brought to you by our friends at Easton Roofing. Eric, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, Soren. You know, I always come on your show, like, right around this time, and I get up late, and I eat dinner late, and then you hit me with these like ads for like this food, and I'm just like, I'm having a hankering for basically everything you just described there.
That's my job. Like that's what I'm supposed to do.
You're great at it. Like if I was in the Kansas City area, I would go out and make a purchase just based upon that.
Well, that's good to know. I'm very excited about that. I like that. All right, I want to talk a little college football as well with you. I know you've been very busy with stuff, but I want to start with the pros, something we talked about, and that is the idea of incentivizing the hiring of minority candidates. You and I were talking about this, the other day off the air, and how could a group of what should be, and I believe are, intelligent men sit together in a room and think that this idea was going to be a good one, was going to be well-received? What could possibly have been behind this?
I think I'm not going to call it well-intentioned, but I do think it was sort of – I don't think there are, like, nefarious acts of any of these people. You know, I think it's more of just a – you know, when you've gone about it the wrong way the whole time, like your first attempt to try to do it the right way is going to be silly. You know what I'm saying? And it doesn't make a lot of sense. I listened to your part with Tim Grunhard, and I wish I'd listened to the part with Nate Taylor too. But you know, it's just one of those where the NFL is in a really hard spot because it's difficult to legislate these things top down. The fact is that a lot of candidates to be a coach, by the time it gets to the head coach, coordinator, GM role, the ship has already sailed, right? And unfortunately, you know, the NFL hasn't really taken the steps to increase minority hiring at the bottom rung. I mean, you look at all the positions you know, you look at almost every single coach at one point in time has been like a quality control coach making almost no money. And those positions predominantly go to people with connections and people who are able to make $20,000 a year. And that's really not the one, you know, the situation. When we talk about trying to hire an African-American head coach, at that point in time, like, it's already been thinned out to the point where, you know, everybody has plausible deniability.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I think that's part of it. And I think the problem lies more in college than it does in the pros. You look at every NFL coach, they almost all worked in college, right? You don't usually get your first job in the pros. And even if you do, it's a quality control, and then you get a position job down in college, and then you make your way back to the pros. And we know that the head coaching, the African-American or minority coaches in college football are almost non-existent, as are the coordinators. I mean, and that's the spot where it seemingly would be easier to get candidates in there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And and that's the really tricky part, because when you think about, you know, I made, you know, light of the fact that, you know, Jack Del Rio and Ron Rivera's sons are two quality control coaches right now for the Washington football team. And, you know, they can make that much money because they can live in the basement of their dad, who's a millionaire, having been a coach and a player in the NFL level. It's even worse at the college level. I mean, you don't want to talk about, you know, for a person to make the choice to be a grad assistant, those people make less than $10,000 to both go to school and to be a coach. And most people, you know, who are of a different socioeconomic standing than, you know, we are, for example, are not going to be able to take that job and thrive. And that's really the issue, is that, like, I mean, there are socioeconomic factors at play. And I'm not going to argue for a second that Steve Belichick, Bill's son, is going to not understand the game of football after a 10-year apprenticeship with the Patriots than somebody who hasn't had that. It's the opportunity that he got that is different than everybody else. And at the college level, it's just exacerbated by the fact, you know, that the entry-level jobs just simply don't pay a living wage.
I agree. One thing I will point out, Ron Rivera, minority, so at least this is a son.
Correct.
Who would be a minority coach if he gets in there. So there is the one, one of a handful of minority coaches that are there, and he's able to pass that along. So that'll at least be some progress. Last thing on this. Can you name a backup quarterback in the NFL that's African-American, not named Jameis Winston right now?
Oh, it's a good one. Tyrod's the starter currently, right?
Yep.
Is Tyler Huntley the backup still in Arizona?
Oh, that's a good one. He might be.
I think he came off the bench and beat Seattle last season, and it was relatively impressive. But you're right. I mean, it's 100%, when the Chiefs, and granted, he helped the Chiefs win the Super Bowl, so I'm not going to, you know, besmirch him much. But Chad Henne breaks his ankle, and, you know, who's the night? Well, it's you know, Phi Ed teacher guy from Oregon, you know, run-of-the-mill Hall of Fame. You know, if a backup quarterback Hall of Fame existed, it would be like, what, Sage Rosenfels and Matt Moore, right? And, like,
right.
Everybody that looks like them. And you're right. I mean, and those guys know the game really well, and they end up being coaches probably at a higher rate, you know, than an African American player playing another position.
It just seems like to me, it's like, okay, if you are so good that you know, we can't stop you from playing quarterback, you can play quarterback, but we're not spending any time trying to develop you, right? Like, or once you're done as a starter, you're done, period. Right? If you can't start, you can't play.
Our mutual friend Matthew Collar, who is from he gave a talk at one of my classes when I was still teaching, and he said the exact same thing. He said, you know, the reason why when you look at the top 10 players in the NFL and, you know, six or seven of them are African-American quarterbacks, it's that, you know, they're to a point where they've overcome almost everything. And they're far more anti-fragile than, you know, let's say, you know, Christian Hackenberg, who's been given everything. You know, from A to Z, and then the moment there's adversity, it's over. And, you know, and then you look at what happened in the XFL. you know, you commented on this, but the terrible quarterbacks in the XFL are the Caucasian players who have gotten this, you know, the Landry Joneses on their seventh chance, and the guys who are, you know, relatively good are the Philip Walkers who got one and only one chance in the NFL. And when that, he didn't succeed, they were like, well, we're done with you. He goes to the XFL and he's terrific. Same with Cardale Jones. And Josh Johnson's been an interesting case study, but it's also sort of a similar idea. It's an interesting thing to think about. And when we, you know, none of these things are comfortable to talk about, but, you know, and examining the sources, what we don't want to do is we don't want to pin it on any one particular, you know, I know the Deshaun Watson a couple weeks ago that he said the Bears never talked to him. It's not a specific Ryan Pace. It's not a specific Bears issue. I don't think it's in any one actor here. I just think it's, you know, we've gotten so accustomed to a system for a while that, you know, it's uncomfortable to address the inequities, but I think we have to.
All right. How much should Chiefs fans love the idea of 4th and 15 from your own 25 as the new onside kick?
Well, it's a lot more probable. The hard part is, though, you know, like I've seen people tweet out the probability of converting that kind of play and all that stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, the hard part is going to be, you know, for Chiefs fans, you're almost never going to be in a position to have to do that, you know, because you're going to be ahead. You know, people, you know, Josh Allen led the NFL in fourth quarter comebacks last year. Well, that's because he's terrible and he isn't behind more often than not, you know, and whereas, you know, Mahomes is already never behind. So, unfortunately, the quarterbacks that would thrive in a 4th and 15 condition, we might only see it once a year, but it might just be worth it to see it that one time.
Yeah, I think, you know, if they are ever down, they're going to be, you know, I heard that they settled on this distance as it being about 20%, which is to try to take the probability of the onside kick, get us back to where it used to be before they changed the rules for safety reasons. But if 20% is the average, then clearly the Chiefs are going to be far ahead of that, right? Patrick Mahomes on long downs and distances are phenomenal. So to me, I'm like, I think they're probably 33% if they go to this rule.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, when they look at 24.8%, I believe it was last year, it's a little bit misleading because the only teams that are trying to convert a 4th and 15 are teams that are behind. And, you know, if you're behind, it's not always the case, but if you're behind, chances are you're worse than the team that you were facing. So I do think it's biased downward. I think the Chiefs, you know, I think our friend Adam Teicher tweeted out, you know, Patrick Mahomes stats on 3rd and 15 and longer, and he was like a 100 passer rating quarterback or better in those circumstances. So, you know, I think the Chiefs will be, you know, well endowed should they ever have to deal with that.
Are you throwing around old school glass jars, or was that a loose dumbbell?
Look, my family. So we are in a home that is owned by my brother-in-law. We are currently in Wisconsin, and my family not completely bought into the idea of trying to be quiet for the next 10 minutes, but you know, getting 90% of the way there. My wife, great. My oldest daughter, fine. My youngest daughter, not necessarily buying into all this.
Yeah, that's all right. I got her back. You know, really, why are you wasting our time here, Dad? Come on, we got things we're trying to do. I'm good with that. I'm good with her approach to things. That works fine for me. All right. I know you try to listen as much as possible. One of the things that stuck in the craw of one of our callers was Clyde Edwards-Helaire playing special teams. And
I remember that.
Yeah. Okay. So you heard Tommy Moe when he called in, but I know, and I talked about this with George. I mean, that is a sign that they're not just gonna like do everything they can to make him turn into a great number 32 overall pick to be the best number one running back. He goes in, and now they're building the best football roster. And if Damian Williams is going to be the lead guy this year, then the number two guy's got to play special teams. I mean, that's just good coaching, isn't it?
Yeah, it sort of reminds me of a time when, you know, Adrian Peterson was drafted by the Vikings, and you know, former Chiefs assistant Brad Childress, you know, Peterson was like the backup behind Chester Taylor, quote unquote, for half the year, and he ran for like 250 yards against the Bears, and Childress called him a great backup running back in a press conference, and I think that's, you know, ultimately, like, what's you know, you brought up a great point on the show where like they play a 4-3 and, you know, the Emmanuel, you know, he's not on the team anymore, but, you know, the Tano Passingo is not running down on special teams, you know, and the Breland Speaks is a, you know, not playing, you know, he's not playing punt gun or anything like that. And your personnel is a little bit tricky. Plus, they have superstars, as you guys talked about earlier today. You know, six of their players are in the top 50 in the NFL. Like, those guys are not playing special teams, whereas a team that's a little bit less, like, star-heavy, almost all their players would play special teams. So if Clyde Edwards-Helaire struggles a little bit, or if he's only getting, you know, 5 to 10 touches a game early on, like, he's going to offer value just being on the, you know, you don't want him inactive, right? Do people who don't want him playing special teams just want him not dressed on game day? Like, that doesn't seem fair, right? So any way that can sort of make sure that he's an option for the Chiefs, you know, is probably a good one.
Yeah, no, I listen, I think he's going to get touches. I think he's going to carry the ball. But, you know, they're like, we got to quit looking at this franchise like everything they do is wrong because they haven't won in 50 years. They just won.
Yep.
So, like, at this point, don't we need to, like, give them the benefit of the doubt first and foremost?
They've won 70% of their games in the last 6 years, 7 years. And, like, five of those years were started by Alex Smith. Like, they're, like, just because, you know, they finally won a Super Bowl, so, like, all sins are forgiven. But even if they did win the Super Bowl last year, they're a great franchise. And Dave Tobe is one of – part of, you know, Dave Tobe is a great coach. He had a tough year last year. But you look at, like, you know, Kelsey McCray 1 year was our highest graded special teams player. DJ Alexander made a Pro Bowl. Eric Murray was our highest grade. Like, he knows how to take some of these players and be plus guys with them. And last year was a little tricky, but, you know, I think part of the reason why he might want Edwards-Helaire out there is because they struggled somewhat on special teams, and they're not a very depth-filled team. They're a very star-laden team, and you know, they need to get some valuable players out there sometimes just to give them better field position. That's kind of what Reed's motto has been.
Well, and I know Tommy's point. He kept saying, and he sent me some emails as well. Listen, what Dave Tobe needs to do is fix the B gap. They had three punts blocked from the B gap. Well, maybe Edwards-Helaire is that guy,
right? Or maybe you know, if you have, maybe if you don't need, like, you know, the downscale roster things, as you guys talked about, like, he has to worry about so many things. Maybe if Edwards-Helaire is a good wing, then you can take your third best linebacker and put him in the B gap. Like, it's all far be it from me, you know, and I played special teams in college and frankly was terrible at it. So, like, I can tell you how, like, you know, how difficult it is. Far be it from me to, like, question one of the best coaches in the history of the league at that.
Well, there's also just the fact that, you know, not playing Edwards-Helaire does not fix the B gap. Right, whether it's Edwards-Helaire or someone else, you know, like, okay, taking him off the field and playing with 10, that doesn't fix anything. And no matter what, I mean, like, those two things don't go together. Like, if you play Edwards-Helaire, we didn't fix this. No, you could play Edwards-Helaire and fix it. Edwards-Helaire may be the fix, or you can fix it with somebody else and still play Edwards-Helaire and get better somewhere else. That's the part. Go ahead.
Yeah, would you rather have Darwin Thompson dressed on game day than Edwards-Helaire just because he can cover the B gap on punts? No. Like, that's the ridiculousness of this whole thing. The only way that not playing Clyde Edwards-Helaire helps your special team is if he makes Damon Williams not dressed on game day, right? Or he's not dressed on game day, and you bring up another guy, a linebacker or defensive tackle or something like that, that can do what you want on special teams. Other than that, the fact that you want to make him ready to do special teams, it helps your whole team.
Yeah, how likely is it that, you know, and listen, coaches, you got to read through the coach speak, but Dave Tobe's usually pretty pointed and straight to the point. He talked about them being young last year, and as we mentioned, and you kind of already touched on, the switch to the 4-3 defense, maybe put him in a bind special teams-wise personnel. But, you know, he seemed pretty genuine when he said, every one of our draft picks, now I'm going to hold Lucas Niang out because unless he's, you know, field goal protect, I guess if that's what you're looking at for him, then fine. He could be involved in that. But he said every one of the draft picks have special teams potential and that he likes them, and he sees them as four-phase guys. I mean, it is entirely possible that, hey, you know, they got away from drafting. You know, they had to put so many resources into restructuring the defense. Now they've had a chance to kind of replenish things. And maybe Clyde Edwards-Helaire won't be called upon because Snead will be there or Keys will be there, guys that they drafted later on in this draft. But I think there is a reason to be optimistic that the special teams will be better this year.
Didn't I could be wrong. Didn't Kareem Hunt block a punt in the 2017 preseason?
Did he really?
I think so, or at least he recovered it or something. There was a play on that involved a block punt that Kareem Hunt ended up with the football. And, yeah, okay, Spencer Ware gets hurt. Now he's the starting running back, so we're not going to have him running down on punts. Great. Everybody's happy. Saran gets fewer emails, all this kind of stuff. But but here's the deal. Like, if Spencer Ware was getting 20 carries, like, what's the harm in having Kareem Hunt do that?
Yeah. No, nothing.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, that's why Dave Tobe, I mean, that's why Dave Tobe has been the best. And that's why, you know, like I always joke about, you know, Andy Reid and they won 67% of their games with Alex Smith. Part of the reason is they get an extra yard of field position better than almost everybody else in the league. And these things aren't mistakes. You know, if Dave Tobe wasn't as good at his job as, you know, you looked at the Super Bowl, they kicked short and covered every single kickoff. And I don't think the 49ers got the ball outside of the 25. You know, those yards matter, and, like, again, I'm far more likely to, like, criticize an offensive or defensive coach because I think I understand that a little bit more. With special teams, we're all guessing, okay? So, you know, and most of that stuff is physical, and most of it is random. You know, the Chiefs had punts blocked, but, like, those are three plays in a season out of, like, 1,500. So, like, it's going to be okay, everybody.
Well, and, like, injuries are a part of the game, and that's one of the things I think Andy Reid gets. Number one, he's confident in his own coaching, that he can go out and get it done. But I also think that, you know, he recognizes, look, I can do whatever I want to try to avoid injuries, but it's not going to happen. So we just have to be good coaches and get everybody ready to play, and we have to be able to shift gears when we need to personnel-wise. And I think this, if you're so terrified of losing Clyde Edwards-Helaire, it means you don't believe in the depth of your defense. So let's say that they share Tommy Moe's opinion, then you've got a roster problem, which takes me to my next point. We mentioned earlier today Pete Prisco, for what it's worth. I disagree because it should have been about 10 quarterbacks first as far as ranking the players, and he's top 10, Mahomes, Aaron Donald, Russell Wilson, Michael Thomas, Christian McCaffrey, Stephen Gilmore, Lamar Jackson, Chandler Jones, Khalil Mack, and Aaron Rodgers. That was his top 10. But nonetheless, I get it that most people look at that and be like, this is boring. This is dumb. Okay, it's reality, but I do get it. It's boring. But if you just take his list, six Chiefs in the top 43. Patrick Mahomes at one, Travis Kelce at 20, Tyrann Mathieu at 34, Chris Jones at 36, Mitchell Schwartz at 41, Tyreek Hill at 43. That's great. That is a great testament to the Chiefs' ability to find, sign, and develop talent. Because they, you know, there's a free agent in Tyrann Mathieu and Mitchell Schwartz, so they got those as free agent calls, and then the other four guys are draft picks, and they've re-signed Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, so it speaks to that they've got an environment that people want to sign on for. But Patrick Mahomes is due a massive contract extension, and Chris Jones is wanting a massive contract extension, and we basically tallied it up. They'll count $130 million against the cap here real soon, that collection of players. And so if you're worried that there's no replacement, then you're worried that there's not enough depth. Having $130 million of what next year may be a cap that drops well below $200 million tied up in six players would seemingly be a scary proposition, would it not?
Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing. And then that's, you know, that's players in the secondary, that's players along the offensive line, and that, you know, those are players Mahomes is going to throw to. And we've been, you know, my boss, Chris Collinsworth, and I have been studying this a little bit, and a lot of to do with, you know, the Mahomes contract, but also the Dak contract. Like, you know, there's when you have to sign a quarterback to the kind of deal that, you know, they're going to have to sign Mahomes to, he better elevate everybody around him. And, you know, when it comes down to the Chiefs, their reality is that they're not going to have a ton of depth on defense. They're not going to have a ton of depth at where brilliant at wide receiver. They're going to, you know, their offensive line is going to be compromised, I think, a little bit. And what the bet the Chiefs are making is that Patrick Mahomes is an enhancer, you know, and he enhances those around him. And you know, Andy Reid's an enhancer because Andy Reid is not under the salary cap. And those are the things that you know, you're going to have to deal with as a Chiefs fan. The fact that special teams might include some starters in it is not really the is not the place I would focus.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't either. Do you agree? Do you agree that those six guys are that good? Is there anyone you're like, well, that's overrated or that's too low on that list? Mahomes 1, Kelce 20, Matthew 34, Chris Jones 36, Mitchell Schwartz 41, Tyreek Hill 43. I think Tyreek Hill is too low.
Yeah, Tyreek Hill is somebody who is, I think he's under the radar. And his personal issues are, I think, a big part of it. But also, he's not a big physical wide receiver. And I think we still prefer that, even though the league is trending more towards guys who can get separation. I think Tyreek Hill is, you know, one of the better receivers in the NFL and probably doesn't get his due because of, you know, because of how great Mahomes is and how great Kelce is. You guys talked about Frank Clark. I think if Frank Clark has a second half, if he has a full season this next year that's as good as the second half in the playoffs that he had last year, he's probably worthy of it. But, you know, I agree with the overall structure, the fact that the Chiefs are a very top-heavy team that you know, looks to their coaching staff to piece together everything else. And so far, it's worked, especially, you know, with Spagnuolo over the last, you know, 18 months.
Yeah, I you know, can stars and Jags work?
It depends upon the stars, right? Like, if your star is Aaron Rodgers and your coach is Matt LaFleur, I think no. If your star is Patrick Mahomes and your coach is Andy Reid and Steve Spagnuolo, I think yes. But your stars have to be of the Tyrann Mathieu ilk, the types of players that can sort of make up for a lot. And what Mathieu did for that defense is he took players who were Jags and made them into average players by basically patching up their issues, right? I mean, you look at Sorensen, you look at Charvarius Ward, all those players were made better because of Mathieu. And I think that that's how the stars and Jags can work. If it's stars who are sort of more, I mean, you look at Aaron Rodgers, he does not make his wide receivers better anymore in Green Bay. And that's a problem because his wide receivers can't make that much because he makes too much. Patrick Mahomes makes every player around him better, including the offensive line, including the receivers. Mathieu does the same. I even think Frank Clark, you know, the statistics don't bear this out, but I think Frank Clark is a, you know, is a culture guy. And I think, you know, when you look at his pass rushes in the playoffs, that's a player that loves playing football and doesn't quit. And I do think that that enhances the players around him.
Yeah, I do too. The Atlanta Falcons have like six guys that are taking up a massive amount as well. The problem is Matt Ryan's not near as good as Patrick Mahomes. And they have no offensive coordinator to speak of. I mean, I don't even remember who the hell is it now. Is it Dirk Cutter again?
Cutter is just a guy. And it also shows, like, I wrote this article on PFF.com about how it's not good to be a copycat. Because when Sarkisian took over for Kyle Shanahan, he said, hey, I'm going to do the exact same thing that Shanahan did. And it shows how much having the actual guy, having actually Andy Reid, is far better than having a guy, you know, and Peterson's won a Super Bowl, but having Peterson or Nagy or Childress or whatever, Shanahan, like, all I think there's a couple, you know, coaches who are force multipliers as brilliant people who have the intuition to not only push the envelope but to create new envelopes. And everybody else is just trying to copycat, but they're half a step behind. And this league is too quick for being a half a step behind.
Yeah, no doubt. We're talking to Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus. You wrote a piece. Tell me the top 25 college football power rankings. How did you go about arriving at this? And I'll nitpick about something here in a minute. You know, how did you put this all together?
Yeah, it's mostly the same way. You know, that we do. You know, NFL power rankings. We'll look at. You know, their grades from the previous season. We'll look at returning production. We'll look at, you know, new coaches, new quarterbacks. And then we will, you know, we'll fold in some market information. So we'll look at the betting odds of, like, how likely it is for a team to win their conference, you know, the college football playoff, and we'll weigh all those things, and that's how we arrive at our rankings. So it's a little bit of PFF data, a little bit of market data, some, you know, returning starter and recruiting data, and that's where we come at it.
Tell me, then, how did LSU get up there at number four?
Yeah, they were so much better than everybody last year that even after adjusting for things, so we adjusted no Burrow, no Joe Brady, no Edwards-Helaire, no Justin Jefferson, no Thaddeus Moss. I mean, there's a lot of
15 draft picks, right? 15 draft picks you got to take out of that equation.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but the thing about it is okay, a season ago, so we had LSU at three, like, going into last year. It was a pretty proud moment for us, right? Just because, no, you know, the people had him in, like, top 10, but maybe not in top five. I think Ogeron, when you look at that, you know, group, there's a real question about sort of how good Burrow was, right? Because, you know, he was just kind of average the year before, you know, and obviously Brady's a big part of it. But, you know, the question is, okay, can they replace the guys that have lost? But they have guys that are back, right? Like, so Jamar Chase is probably going to be a top five pick in the NFL draft. Offensive line, you know, the guys even that they had drafted weren't great, right? They were sort of hangers on, in my estimation. And then defensively, yeah, they had a lot of talented players. But Grant Delpit missed a ton of tackles last year. Chaseon was not as productive. He was Danelle Hunter-like in terms of his production. So I don't think they lost a ton defensively, but this is very much a, just from the nuts and bolts of it, you know, we take, basically, when we regress somebody to the mean, we regress them to their conference mean. So the fact that they're in the SEC does influence their ranking a lot. But, you know, I don't know. I could, where would you put them, Seren?
Would you have, well, I mean, behind? Yeah. I mean, listen, yeah, not 20, right? Because I do think there's still
Georgia,
talent there.
Georgia and Florida currently have better Vegas odds than they do, and I can't hate that, right?
Right. Right.
But I don't know. There's some program effects that I like with LSU. Home field advantage, coach, skill positions are still top notch. Losing Burrow is huge, but you know that's, yeah, it's a lot of last season being weighed maybe a little bit too much, but also the fact that their program, when you talk about recruiting rankings, when you talk about how good their coach is, that's kind of what's keeping them afloat here.
If they announce they're going to play with no fans, will you back them up?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, that's a huge deal. And you know, it's a huge deal in the NFL too, but I think it's even a bigger deal in college.
Yeah. All right. Final four time for you, Eric. Four quickies. I'll start you with this. Why are you? Why did Oklahoma State not make the top 25?
That's a good question. What happened to them a season ago? So you're talking about Chuba Hubbard and?
Well, I just mean they're everybody's darling. I'm completely open to the fact that they're grossly overrated. Like, everybody loves their skill position players. Great receiver, returning quarterback, 2,000-yard running back. I mean, you know, they're most, like, when I read other people's, like, odds write-ups, they're the darling. They love the value of Oklahoma State. Like, Oklahoma's still the favorite. They'll probably win, but the value is in Oklahoma State, everybody says.
I would say that some of that didn't materialize well enough last year for us to buy into it, right? Where you look at, you know, sort of, and then this is to a lesser extent, but you look at LSU a season ago, and they were competitive in every single game with Burrow not playing all that great. And they played in the SEC, right? Where you look at Oklahoma State, like, yeah, sure, they are the darlings, but frankly, we only have, what, two or three teams from the Big 12 even in this ranking. So it's a lot having to do with, like, you know, conference effects and things like that. We're far more likely to have a team from the Big Ten or the SEC, you know, up there than we are somebody, you know, from the Pac-12 or the Big 12.
Okay. Has it stopped snowing in Wisconsin yet?
You know, actually, it's really nice out, and I don't know if you know this, but we have some, like, farm investments here. My wife's family does farming, and they're just starting to, like, plant and stuff now. So it is green out here. The weather's not great, obviously, even compared to even Cincinnati or Kansas City, but it's passable at least now, which is why, you know, we've made it out here.
Okay. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, over or under 950 yards from scrimmage. That's the bet. That's
from
the total
scrimmage,
that's out there.
Under, just because I always bet unders with props, player props.
Really? Okay, okay. Well, if you do that across the board, you'll win more than you lose?
Yeah, the number of things that can go bad are way higher than the number of things that can go right, you know?
Okay.
Something like Lamar Jackson 0.5 starts his rookie year, obviously, but like 950 yards is a lot.
Yeah, it is. It is. There's no doubt. Particularly when Damian Williams, you know, is you know, there with him. I think everyone's counting on Kareem Hunt to emerge, and reality is Kareem Hunt wouldn't have been what Kareem Hunt was had Spencer Ware not gotten hurt. So Damian Williams does have a history of getting hurt, so we'll see. I think the number's pretty solid. I think it's probably a little bit bloated off the Andy Reid thing. I think probably 800 or 850 might be a better number because I think they're going to use Damian Williams because they think it's going to be his last year, so why not get everything you can out of him on his way out the door. All right, finally, in these very unique times, what kind of big plans can you have for a Memorial Day three-day weekend?
Yeah, man, it's not much, right? It's mostly, you know, maybe grilling up some steaks. Man, but it's watching old Chiefs games on YouTube doesn't sound like a perfect, but that's probably what I'll end up doing as a complete dork. Writing up some code for fantasy football and, you know, listening to the program, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
Those are the types of things. But, you know, no, this sucks, right? Like, I can't go to, like, the lake or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting times, to say the least. Eric, always great talking to you, buddy. Appreciate the time. Stay safe. And, of course, have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
You too, guys. Thanks for having me on, Saran.
Yeah, always, buddy. Always. Eric Eager, best in the business, pro football focused data scientist, Chiefs fan. Love talking to Eric Eager. We'll take a break, come back, give you the kicker before we go.
The program with Soren Petro.
He has the body of Adonis, but the eating habits of Homer Simpson.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
I'll give you one interesting story from Mike Axisa, A-X-I-S-A. You want to take a shot at the pronunciation? Okay.
My mic wasn't up. Axisa. I think Axisa is good.
It's Access, so we've had him on the show before.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Show, but no.
Why the coronavirus shutdown? Yeah, it's Okoye. Why the coronavirus shutdown could lead to MLB expansion in the near future, and he points out it's an interesting story how they have on a number of occasions, like when they lost the collusion case, expansion came up right after it.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, expansion? I mean, it's going to be over $1 billion if the Royals sold for over $1 billion. Any team coming in would be $1 billion. They'd add two. That's a couple $1 billion. Maybe it'd be $2 billion each. I don't know what the cost would be for an expansion franchise, but they want to make up that revenue, expand. Now they'd have to divide it up by two more teams, but we've heard Jason Stark tell us many times that they seem to be headed towards 32 teams, and now would be a great time. So in the midst of all of this,
two birds, one stone.
We could see expansion popping up here. One other thing, Nick Saban. Did a PSA. It was released today where he's wearing a mask and urging others to wear masks and practice social distancing, even chastising the Alabama mascot for not having a mask. But in his defense, how do you wear a mask with a trunk? Okay, think about that.